It's 60 miles across, mostly hidden from view and vital to Idaho's economy. Most of the time, the Eastern Snake Plain Aquifer gets little attention, even from the people who rely on it every day. As we begin this week's series called Watering Idaho, Samantha Wright takes a closer look at the state's largest body of water hidden underneath the Snake River Plain.
Park Ranger Eric Whittakin stands at the base of the Minnie Miller Springs waterfall at Thousand Springs State Park near Wendell.
Breathtaking, I guess, would be one word. You just have these waterfalls just gushing out of the side of the canyon.
For roughly 40 miles along the Snake River Canyon wall, one waterfall after another shoots out of solid rock cliffs. This is the bottom edge of the Snake River Plain Aquifer, where the water emerges from its underground journey.
It covers a significant portion of southern Idaho, the aquifer does. It's a large area and a lot of water.
The aquifer is the size of Lake Erie, covering about 10,000 square miles of Idaho, starting near the Wyoming border. It's fed by streams coming out of mountain ranges. Dr. Paul Link, a professor at Idaho State University, says the water and snowmelt sinks underground into a series of nooks and crannies of rock.
It is a saturated network of fractures, mainly within this basalt, these lava flows. The best way to think of it is an interconnected series of pores like a sponge.
Link says the aquifer is the result of the Yellowstone hotspot. A hotspot is a blob of superheated rock deep underground fueled by the heat of the earth. Right now it's under Yellowstone, but it hasn't always been there. The North American plate has been moving 1.8 inches a year for 17 million years. As the plate moved, it dragged Idaho over the hotspot.
We think that the hotspot originated in southeast Oregon, west of the Owyhee River, and then as the North American plate has moved southwestward, the hotspot has relatively appeared to move northeastward.
As the plate moved, the hotspot and its volcanic tendencies erupted, melted, and carved a curving path through eastern Idaho. That volcanism created lots of rock, primarily rhyolite and basalt. As the hotspot slowly cut the landscape, the new rocks sank below the surface and became the Eastern Snake Plain Aquifer.
And it really is a world-class aquifer. And we are fortunate to have it in Idaho and has fueled much of Idaho's economic growth over the second half of the 20th century.
Brian Patton is bureau chief at the Idaho Department of Water Resources. He says without the aquifer, eastern Idaho would lose half its farmland. Roughly 1.6 million acres of irrigated land is dependent on the aquifer. Urban areas use it as well.
Cities like Twin Falls, Jerome, Pocatello, Burley, Idaho Falls, Blackfoot, Rexburg, and every other smaller town in between uses that aquifer.
And he says the aquifer is why the Magic Valley and eastern Idaho have become centers for agriculture processing. Think Chobani and Cliff Bar. And much of America's farm-raised trout is grown in Idaho using aquifer water.
So it's not just an agricultural issue, it's a municipal and an industrial issue, and ultimately an issue that affects the economy of the state of Idaho. That region accounts for about one-third of Idaho's economic output.
No one knows how much water is in the aquifer. It's hard to measure a sponge. But the Department of Water Resources does know about 7.5 million acre-feet of water is moving through the aquifer every year. And they know that amount is dropping. In 1992, the department stopped issuing new water rights on the Snake River Plain. That means everyone, from cities to farmers to businesses, are trading old water rights if they want to expand.
And that has put a stop to new agricultural development. I mean, there's just no room for it under the way it currently works.
As farmers switched from flood irrigation to sprinklers in the 1950s, less water seeped back into the aquifer. That, along with the drilling of new wells, power generation needs, and climate change, has shrunk the aquifer. Senior and junior water rights holders are fighting over who gets the dwindling supply. A new agreement reached last year among groundwater users in eastern Idaho is designed to stop the decline and help recharge the aquifer. But Brian Patton with the Department of Water Resources says that won't stop the growing demand for water.
In my view, declining aquifers are going to be the water issue of the 21st century in the western United States.
In a state that relies so heavily on the Eastern Snake Plain Aquifer, it will certainly be an issue that will get a lot of attention here in Idaho. For KBSS,
much of the U.S. relies primarily on surface water for clean, reliable tap water, but Idaho is a rare case in that our underground aquifers supply most of the water we use in our homes. Today, we continue our series Watering Idaho with this report from Adam Cotterell.
When I turn on a sink, I often wonder where the water's coming from. It turns out in this case, if I turn around, I can see the answer through the window. It's the Boise River. If I could go up the faucet and through the pipes, I'd come out less than a mile upstream.
Here.
We're at the Marden Water Treatment Plant adjacent to the Boise River next to the Warm Springs Golf Course.
That's Mark Snyder with Suez, the multinational company that supplies drinking water to most of Boise and some of Eagle.
This was our first surface water treatment plant in the system. We've subsequently added a second one that's up on the hill near Micron.
Snyder says about 30% of Boiseans get their water from the river through these two plants. The process starts with a big cylindrical structure that sticks out into the river.
And a lot of times you'll see kids jumping off it in the summer months. We discourage that. There are no trespassing signs, but people often don't pay attention to those.
I have jumped off it myself.
Okay, there you go. It's a large concrete structure that goes down under the river bottom.
Snyder says little hidden things, a lot like drinking straws, take water from the floor of the river and pipe it into the treatment plant. It goes through filters, and then a chemical called a coagulant is added. That's like glue, and tiny particles in the water stick to it. Then loud machinery pumps the water into this airplane hangar-sized room, where it's filtered again and then pumped into concrete pools. It sits in the pools for a while so the last of the gunk can float to the top. It goes through one more filtration, and then it's pumped out to a huge underground tank, and chlorine is added. It has to sit in that tank for a while, but then it's sent to homes and businesses in East and Northeast Boise, as well as downtown. Nationwide, the majority of drinking water is surface water. It comes from rivers, lakes, even the ocean in some places. But Jerry Henry, the drinking water program manager at Idaho's Department of Environmental Quality, says in Idaho, only 5 to 10% of drinking water comes from rivers or lakes. Henry says the reason is simple.
It's really expensive to treat surface water to drinking water standards. You're getting a lot of, well, microorganisms, and that's what you're trying to treat for, you know, your cryptosporidium, your giardia.
Idaho doesn't use much surface water for drinking because we don't have to. Most of the state has access to water that doesn't require nearly as much work and money to make it drinkable. So where does the other 90 to 95% of Idaho's drinking water come from? To find out, we'll go to Meridian, to a garage-sized building on the edge of a city park.
So this is well 20. We pump the water from the ground and outside to the reservoir.
Dennis Teller is Meridian's water superintendent. That screaming sound comes from one of three pumps. The reservoir Teller mentioned is a 2-million-gallon concrete tank just a few yards away. All of Meridian's drinking water comes from an aquifer. These porous layers of rock are like giant underground sponges. Meridian has 23 wells drilled down into that sponge, and outside the noisy pump house, Teller says because of the city's rapid growth, most of those are only a few years old.
We have been drilling wells continuously. We're actually in the process of drilling three new wells. Luckily, we are not seeing any issues with the groundwater supply.
Idaho's aquifers are the reason the state has more abundant and cleaner drinking water than much of the West. All of the drinking water in Eagle, Garden City, Nampa, and a lot of other cities comes from aquifers. Most of Boise's does, too. Suez has more than 80 wells that supply 70% of Boise's water. But Suez's Mark Snyder says there are a couple of reasons the company does not rely entirely on groundwater. He says there are restrictions on aquifer access in East Boise. Plus, he says it gives the company more flexibility for things like spikes in demand.
We can ramp up and expand both treatment plants if necessary. We can't always drill another well.
Snyder says the Boise River is cleaner and easier to treat than many of the surface water sources used in other parts of the country. But it still requires a lot more work than groundwater. Suez does add chlorine to Boise's groundwater before sending it to homes as a precaution. So does Meridian. But Jerry Henry with the DEQ says most of the nearly 800 municipal drinking water systems in Idaho that they monitor don't.
Most don't have to do anything. Typically, your groundwater sources are already filtered kind of through the ground. So most of those aren't needing to be treated.
Just as they've helped fuel growth in the state's ag industry, Idaho's huge underground water reserves have also played a major role in the state's cities. They continue to provide a reliable supply of low-cost drinking water many other western states would envy. For KBS.
This morning, we continue our reporting on Idaho's water supply with a story on the health of the state's vast Snake River Plain aquifer. Frankie Barnhill continues our series, Watering Idaho, with a story on the contamination of the rural water supply and what's being done to fix it.
Wilder, Idaho, knows how to throw a Cinco de Mayo party. Besides all the food vendors and booths with family-friendly activities, there's a table near the back of the city park that's a little less popular.
You'll notice that most of the activity is occurring over near the food, but we have had a handful of folks come by.
That's Esther Seha. She works for the Idaho Department of Environmental Quality, or DEQ, an agency that monitors water. She speaks both Spanish and English, which comes in handy as she steps aside to talk to a Latino farm worker concerned about drinking water contamination.
El más alto color de rosa indica que el nivel de nitrato está a 10 miligramos.
Seha talks with him about nitrates, contaminants found in wells in the farm country surrounding Wilder. The man tells Seha that his family does not drink from a private well, but his coworkers do. He takes some nitrate test strips to give to his friends. Nitrate is a compound that's difficult to get rid of once in a well or aquifer. The biggest risk is to newborns, who can die from reduced oxygen in their blood, a disorder known as blue baby syndrome. Pregnant women are also at risk. The State Department of Environmental Quality says nitrates are the most common groundwater contaminant in Idaho. They come from three sources: inorganic fertilizer, human waste, and animal waste. And to Justin Hayes of the Idaho Conservation League, that last source is the most concerning.
Contaminating an aquifer is very rarely from one source or one site. It's sort of death by a thousand cuts. And across a lot of southern Idaho, there are many dairies and feedlots, and so each one of them is contributing some amount to this problem.
Hayes has watched the number of dairy cows increase in southern Idaho in the last couple of decades, especially in counties like Twin Falls, Cache, Gooding, and Jerome. Today, more than 500,000 cows are milked in Idaho, making the state third in milk production in the nation. At the same time, Hayes says he's seen the quality of the aquifer decline.
You know, the average dairy cow might produce 80 pounds of manure and liquids a day. That's the equivalent of waste from about 20 million humans. So that's like the entire city of Los Angeles dumping their waste untreated in fields across southern Idaho.
He says that without improved practices to manage animal waste at large dairies, the nitrate levels in the aquifer will just get worse in years to come. But Idaho dairy owner Mike Roth says his operation is not polluting groundwater. Roth owns Cy Ellen Farms in Jerome, right in the heart of Idaho's dairy country. He says making sure they protect groundwater is a core part of running a successful business and is something his operation is already doing.
You have to be responsible for your family and for your employees and for the environment, because we're the ones drinking the water out of the wells, and we certainly wouldn't want to contaminate our own family.
Roth says his 93-year-old mother lives on the farm and drinks the well water. The dairy has 100 employees and 7,000 cows, producing about 120 million gallons of milk a month. The family moved their business from Washington 20 years ago. They came for lower operating costs and an agriculture-friendly political climate. Roth says they're doing a good job of policing themselves.
I mean, the days of farmers just applying what they want and doing what they want, those people are going to weed themselves out.
Roth is referencing a case in Washington State's Yakima Valley, where a group of dairies were sued over nitrate contamination in the groundwater and later agreed to sweeping changes on how they handle waste. That set a precedent that's made Idaho dairies like Cy Ellen Farms nervous. David Misesh is the man in charge of making sure environmental rules are followed at the dairy. On a tour on a hot summer day, he shouts over the industrial milking machinery. Fans are going full blast as cows are moved in and out of the facility.
There's 50 a side in here. There's 100 cows at one time. The cows like it cooler than hotter, so all the fanning and they even have a mister system. It gets really hot. They'll spray a mist in here.
Misesh constantly monitors the farm's waste management practices, making sure the thousands of pounds of cow manure don't sink into the aquifer. He says inspectors from the Idaho Department of Agriculture and the DEQ come by regularly to check on the operation.
We fly drones over the fields and monitor the water, if it's moving anywhere, the sprinklers are working correctly. I just got a new app on here for FarmLogic. You can record everything you do right on your phone. It comes into the computers and the girls can make printouts, and it's easier than it used to be.
To Rick Narabout, farms like this one are the rule in Idaho, not the exception. Narabout says the Dairy Association has raised money from its members to fund research about best practices.
We're not afraid of making sure we're doing things right. We just feel like the day has come where maybe we don't need continued focus like we've gained over the last 20 years. Maybe it's time to focus in other areas.
Narabout points out that unlike crop farmers, Idaho dairy producers are required to have a waste management plan. He says the association last fall hired a soil specialist to work with farmers on how to manage animal waste and fertilizer. And in some places, these efforts seem to be working. Between 2008 and 2014, the number of wells contaminated by nitrates decreased in some parts of the state. But to Ed Hagen of the DEQ, a decreasing trend over 6 years is not enough to say the nitrate problem is going away. The State Environmental Agency began closely tracking nitrate levels in wells in 2001 and works with the Department of Agriculture and the Department of Water Resources to gather data. State law requires that the three agencies share the responsibility to monitor nitrates. However, neither Hagen nor his colleagues at the Department of Agriculture will directly link the dairy industry to Idaho's nitrate problem. Here's as close as Hagen will get.
I think there's been a recognition since we've been doing these nitrate priority areas that, you know, there's some problems, and I think maybe the dairy industry's improved their practices. Maybe some of the ag producers have improved their practices.
Justin Hayes of the Idaho Conservation League says state regulators are doing what they can to monitor dairies and groundwater, but that the state's multi-agency approach is splintered and therefore not effective. However, Hayes is not expecting regulatory changes from the Idaho legislature. After all, this is a state where the controversial and now unconstitutional ag gag law was easily passed in 2014. Instead, Hayes says the industry needs to invest even more in better waste management practices above and beyond what's mandated by the government. Without these changes, Hayes paints a bleak picture when it comes to clean water access for families in rural parts of the state.
Knowing that the water that's coming out of my tap would be poisonous to children sounds pretty bad to me. And I think that's of tremendous concern to people in rural Idaho.
For KBSX News.
Our series Watering Idaho continues this morning with the story of a legal fight over water flowing through the Treasure Valley. The rhetoric has become intense. Adam Cotterell explains.
This is the sound of the Boise River flowing under a bridge near downtown. This spring, the spot I'm standing on was underwater. That's because this year's big snowpack meant the federal agencies that manage Lucky Peak Dam had to let a lot of water out to avoid potential flooding. Lucky Peak was built in the 50s primarily to prevent the periodic floods that plagued parts of Boise. But the dam is also used to store water for irrigation. Here's the issue. The state says that water that went downstream belonged to people like Clinton Pline.
I'm kind of a semi-retired farmer. I still stay active in agriculture, doing a little bit of work here on my home place.
Pline drives backwards on a dirt road near Nampa. It's just wide enough for the tires of the shiny white pickup he calls his mobile office.
I back up all the time, so.
Such a narrow strip right between, you know, water and
water
the,
and a drop-off.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you learn to use your mirrors.
On one side is the Reidenbaugh Canal that takes water from the Boise River to Meridian and Nampa. On the other side, several feet below the road, is a field of Pline's sugar beets. Pline and others with old water rights are called seniors. This group, a lot of whom are farmers, get first dibs on any water released from Lucky Peak. Those with newer claims, juniors, have to wait until the seniors get all they're entitled to. In a normal year or a dry year, the first water released goes down the canals to senior irrigators like Pline. But in a wet year, like this one, the first water released gets sent down the river where Pline can't get to it.
We believe it's wrong that the state can now say, we're shipping this water downriver in order to make room for more storage water, but yet we're going to count that as you using that water, even though we haven't used it. That just doesn't make any sense.
When Plyan says we, he means the Nampa Meridian Irrigation District and the Treasure Valley Water Users, a lobbying group created to press this side of the argument. People call this the refill issue because the reservoir gets full, water is let out to avoid flooding, and then it refills with melting snow. The question is, and this is the key, who gets first dibs on the water after the reservoir refills? Matt Weaver, deputy director of the Idaho Department of Water Resources, says sending the water down the river satisfies the senior user's claim just as if they'd sent it down the canal.
Once they have received their satisfaction under their base right, they then go to the end of the line.
And the junior users go to the front. The seniors will still get water they can actually use, if there's enough, after the juniors have had theirs. In a way, you could see this as a struggle between rural and urban interests, between people like Plyan and people like, well, me. I live in Boise, I get my water from the Suez Company, like most Boise residents, and Suez is the biggest junior in this fight. It gets 30% of its water from the river and is counting on river water to supply future needs as Boise grows. In dry years, Suez's Mark Snyder says the company has to scramble to get more water because the senior users get everything in Lucky Peak.
If necessary, and we have on occasion, we will go to the open market and acquire more water. That is the most expensive water you can get.
That cost usually gets passed on to the customers. But Suez doesn't have to worry about that in wet years, in part because there's more water, but also because it goes to the front of the line. If the farmers get their way.
Our concern is that we would not be able to meet the demand of our customers if certain senior water rights holders were to get that water first.
But on the other side, Darren Kuhn with the Nampa Meridian Irrigation District says if the state is allowed to allocate water the way it wants, farmers won't get enough and crops will wither in the fields, ironically, in the years with the most water.
The state of Idaho, its economic engine is still agriculture. If you go out of your way to create a circumstance that injures agriculture in this part of the state, then you're going to devastate the economy.
Idaho Attorney General Lawrence Wasdin, who's arguing the state's position in court, says water users don't have the same claims to Lucky Peak water that they do to water in the other reservoirs on the Boise River. Since Lucky Peak is about flood control first, using it for irrigation is almost like having bonus water, from the state's perspective. So to Wasdin, the other side is making a big deal out of a small thing.
If you look back over the last 30 years, everyone's gotten their water. So is this a tempest in a teapot? Maybe, but it really also looks to the future. We need to have some certainty about what the rules are that apply.
Wasdin says for farmers to not get all their water in a wet year, it would take a big miscalculation by the federal agencies that manage the dam. He acknowledges that could happen, but he says it's very unlikely. Still, the possibility of a mistake big enough to cause a shortage is a major concern for senior and junior users. Quick pause. We mentioned this is complicated. Let's review. In years with a lot of snow and rain, Lucky Peak water gets sent down the river to avoid flooding. The state says to people at the front of the line, that was your water, now go to the back of the line. Those people say that's not fair. And the state responds, well, the way the Attorney General interprets the law, the state must count water released into the river the same as water released into the canals. The farmers obviously have a different interpretation. Wasdin's other argument dates back to the mid-1960s. That's when Wasdin says all the canal companies and irrigation districts signed contracts with the federal government about using Lucky Peak water for irrigation. Here's his message to them.
The contract that you hold with the federal government says the federal government has the power to release your water for flood control.
A lot of this fight is about things that happened many decades ago. So why are they arguing about it now? Just a few years ago, there was another court case about how the state accounts for refill water in the Snake River. So it was 2013 when Treasure Valley Canal Companies first heard the state's position that flood releases down the river satisfy farmers' claims to irrigation water. Darren Kuhn with the Nampa Meridian Irrigation District says the idea seemed really unorthodox.
I've worked here for 40 years, and it just left me scratching my head. And it took literally weeks for me to figure out what it is the state was thinking or what their theory is.
The state says it has been accounting for Lucky Peak water this way since 1986. The companies say if the state was doing it this way, it never told them. The state says the canal companies just didn't understand what was happening because there's plenty of water in Lucky Peak for everyone in years like this. But farmer Clinton Pline says despite some of the rhetoric from his side, it's not really about running out of water this year or next year.
What's really the concern is down the road 20, 30, 40, 50 years from now.
Estimates for population growth in the valley have farmers worried. With that in mind, the state has offered a compromise to put the seniors ahead of future users. But up till now, they haven't been interested. Earlier this month, a judge issued a ruling on part of the case. It wasn't a clear victory for either side, but it did lean more in the state's favor. If that doesn't prompt a compromise, the issue will probably end up in the Idaho Supreme Court. For KBSX News.
A new study predicts the Treasure Valley will grow by nearly a million people in the next 50 years. That's more than double the region's current population. Today, Scott Graff wraps up our series, Watering Idaho, by examining how well prepared the Boise area is to meet that demand and why some think the valley is at risk of losing water rights to other states.
Kevin Vieira stands in his living room, admiring the Eagle home he bought in July.
Well, the floor is pure alder, and the cabinets, I think, are too.
Vieira and his wife, Vicky, moved here from Northern California just 3 months after visiting a friend who'd already relocated to the area. Vieira, fresh off a career as a police officer, had gotten tired of his native state's crime and traffic. Vieira says he's in awe of the lifestyle he's found here. The couple is one of five they know relocating to southwestern Idaho from other states. A few miles away in Meridian, Kyle Raddick looks over a landscape that will help accommodate some of that new growth.
So last year this was a cornfield, this year it's fallow, getting ready for homes.
Part of Raddick's job with the city of Meridian is to make sure there's water for a rapidly expanding population. 90,000 people are estimated to live here now. By 2065, that number could quadruple.
And the corresponding water demand, average day for those people, we estimated at 45 million gallons a day.
To better understand what the entire valley's water demand will look like in 50 years, the panel in charge of managing Idaho's water system, the State Water Resource Board, commissioned a study. Released in March and then tweaked last month, it predicts an increase of about 240% in the amount of water we use for domestic, commercial, municipal, and industrial, so-called DCMI, purposes. Basically everything but irrigation water. That increase may sound huge, but Brian Patton, the chief of the board's planning bureau, is not panicking.
I don't think it's an immediate serious problem, but we do need to start planning for where it is that we go to accommodate this and figure out how we manage our water resources in the face of that growth.
Patton says the Treasure Valley is much better off than many other urban areas in the West. With a large reservoir system and a big underground aquifer, there's just more water here. Besides, the vast majority of water used in the Boise area, between 80 and 90%, is for irrigation. And as more cropland turns into homes, the demands for irrigation water could fall, potentially freeing up more water to meet that growing DCMI demand. But some complained when this year's water study failed to examine that particular and very large piece of the water puzzle.
We are not attempting to account for or find new uses for the water that was dedicated to that former irrigation.
Jeff Faraday is a longtime water rights attorney in Boise. And while it seems like having extra irrigation water to repurpose would be a good problem to have here in the high desert, Faraday says without fully understanding how much of that water exists, the state can't adequately plan its water future. At a minimum, he says it's a blind spot for water planners. Much worse, he fears Boise River water rights could soon be grabbed through the court system by farmers downstream in Oregon and Washington. And Faraday says if the region were to lose some water rights, it might face the possibility of having to meet increased demands in the future with less water than it has today. Meanwhile, back at the former cornfield that will soon become a Meridian subdivision, Kyle Raddick grabs a hose hooked to his city's newest test well, drilled way down in the Treasure Valley aquifer.
So here's zone 6, which is somewhere around 300 feet deep.
Water pours out on the ground. Radek says 20 years of monitoring has shown the aquifer remains strong and can support even more demand. For KBSX News, I'm Scott Graff.